OTB Sports Radio. Football never stops, and neither do we.
Don't shoot.
Oh, he dinked it. Oh! It's a goal! It's a goal!
The Football Show is the only place to get the best analysis.
We've tried this way, and we've been trying it for a long time, and it's just active process now.
Best interviews.
There was talk that you used to go commando when you played, and
Yeah, I did. I never wore pants. Still don't wear pants.
And best opinions on all things from across the pond and here in Ireland. Live every night from 9 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
I listen all the time.
Get OTB Sports Radio online at offtheball.com/radio or on your phone by downloading the Go Loud app.
Oh, the shame that will get. You've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I love playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you except for those two have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Yes, you're very welcome along to Team 33, and a call here with you for about an hour or so. Coming up on tonight's show, we'll be chatting to Mark Quigley as part of our LOI Legend series. We're on to episode 7 now, so we're getting close to that 10 mark. Good news in a football front this week. The Bundesliga has confirmed that it is returning on the 16th of May, so we shall all turn into Bundesliga German football hipsters over the next couple of weeks. If you want some essential reading before that season comes back, look up the history of Union Berlin, who are currently sitting in the mid-table of the Bundesliga. Really, really interesting club. Basically, in the Cold War, they were separated by the Berlin Wall. They're an East Berlin club, so they couldn't take part in the German league. And essentially, they went through a whole bunch of financial crises until the fans finally took action and took over the club and saved it. And now they're competing in the Bundesliga. So they're a really brilliant club and really interesting. And they've got some absolutely stonewall crazy fans. So if you want to have a look at that, if you want to do a deep dive into the Bundesliga before it comes back, have a look at them. And also check out our YouTube channel on Off the Ball on the Paddy Power Half Hour. Myself, Will O'Callaghan, and Phil Egan were speaking to Ronan Murphy from Goal.com about the Bundesliga's return, and we basically did a big preview of the season coming and all the talking points that you're going to need to learn before the Bundesliga comes. But before all that, we'll chat to Mark Quigley, who joins us on the line now. Mark, how are you getting on?
Yeah, goes very good, Emma. Good to hear you.
How have you been finding lockdown so far?
Well, I've actually enjoyed it, to tell you the truth. Just having to chill in the house and have plenty of time to kids and sort of not worry about work and stuff like that. I know there's stuff going on. Obviously, that's probably a selfish thing saying that with people doing stuff. But for me, like, you know, it's been good. I've been really close to the family, you know, because with stuff at work and school and that, you know, sometimes you don't get to see them as much. So we've spent a lot of time together for over the last whatever 2 months it's been, you know, getting out for our exercise and doing different games that we probably wouldn't have and stuff like that. So yeah, so I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it's you know, sort of hours are all over the place. Days are turning into different days and weekend. I don't think there's weekend or days anymore or hours. So it's something to get readjusted to, but we'll be back to the real world soon, I think, with work and school and stuff like that. So I think I'm just sort of making the most of it.
And are the kids in primary school or secondary school, or where are they at now?
They're in primary, so my daughter's 10 and my son is 6, so they're at a good age where, you know, they're not hassling me too much and stuff like that. We get out and do our exercises and play our games. They do their homework and that, so they're a good help around the place and stuff like that. So,
have you attempted homeschooling yet?
Yeah, well, we try our best. Well, I try my best. My wife be better than me. But the kids are already, they seem to know the stuff themselves. They're getting sent. It's just basic stuff that they'd be doing in school anyway. So it's nothing too hard. And, you know, we don't put too much pressure on them to do it every day and stuff like that with the time it is that we're sort of living in, you know. You don't want the stress of having them, you know, can't do work and then worrying about getting out and stuff like that. So we chip away at every second day or third day or stuff like that. So it keeps them busy, you know.
And you're still involved in football around Dublin. You're still in charge of Sheriff, as far as I understand, are you?
Yeah, I'm still the manager of Sheriff, yeah. First of the season, sort of. I don't really know what way it's... I don't know. I don't see it coming back, really, this season. Or I don't know what way they're going to go about it. I haven't really heard much. I think we still had maybe 12 or 13 league games left or something. So I don't know how they'll finish that up and stuff like that. We weren't in, I think we probably two cup competitions left in. It was midway through my second season. I had my fourth season was lastly, and that was a sort of my first taste of management, which I really enjoyed, and we were very successful. So yes, so all nods been going well. But you know, the lads, to be fair, now we're in the group and they'll still keep ticking over. And to be fair to them, you know, they don't really have to. You know, it's not professional club stuff like that. But that's, you know, they're good lads, and they want to sort of eat, if it's to hit the ground running next season or to finish this season. I think, you know, it won't take as long to get prepared for games.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask. Was because Sheriff and the likes of the clubs competing at the highest level of the Leinster Senior League are in a very interesting position, because a lot of them arguably could compete in the second division of the League of Ireland, and yet they're amateur players. How do you keep players like that at the peak of their level throughout this kind of thing?
Well, it's just keep them, you know, keep it enjoyable and keep winning things. I think if lads see that you're winning things and you're doing things right and keep them motivated. And there's a thing as well where, you know, if there's a player I see that's sort of too good for us or too good for the league, I try my best to push them on. Or, you know, we've had a couple of lads, a couple of lads drop down from the fourth division to play for us for a couple of months and give them the sort of the enjoyment back of the football. And it's, you know, it's good contest for them. And they've moved up again, which is sort of what I enjoy. I like seeing, you know, a player doing well and then I'm getting a chance back in the league. Dylan Grimes done out, he was with us for a season. Sort of fell out of love with the game at Shells, and now he's fired well. He came back to us, started loving his football again, was absolutely flying. But we've a couple of players that are that I think would play at a higher level, but some of them don't really want to, so I do be sort of trying my best to push them. But the lads seem to be happy. You know, it's some lads are at a certain age now where, you know, they don't really want it. And there's lads now, the really older lads that be sort of my age and 32, 33, that I cannot believe they never did play in the league. There's probably three or four players on my team that the older lads now that be coming towards the end of it that never really got a go in the league world. And, you know, I've played with a lot of teams and a lot of players, and these lads be, you know, better than most players I've played with, to tell you the truth. So it's just, you know, it can be sort of look at the drawer or you're motivated, or some lads have work and they, you know, they think that's, you know, they go down the work route because they think it's better. It's not, the football's probably not stable enough for money and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you're joining us as part of our LOI Legends series, so we will get into your career in a little bit. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you about your beginnings in football as well, because you grew up in around the Mountjoy Road area, am I correct?
Sean McDermott Street, around that, sort of right next to Conley Station.
So in between
Summer Hill and Sheriff Street, around that area. So it was a tough area to come up in, but a great area. Liberty House Flats I grew up in, and it was just football from the start. My earliest memories of football are just as soon as I could walk. I was kicking a ball, I was carrying a ball around me. So
yeah, there just seems to be something in the water around that area as well, because if you look at some of the players that have come out of there, even if the modern day players, the likes of Troy Parrott came from that area, Jack Byrne is around that road, Wes Hoolahan. I know you grew up with as well, so it must have been just street football through and through, is it?
Yeah, Derek Pendott as well, Anthony Flood, Trevor Malloy, there's a lot of players from this area, and it's just sort of, you know, this day and age is different. Kids have, you know, they can put their hand to anything, as in sit in the house, and the kids can sit in the house for a week and not get bored with all this technology and stuff and tellies. Whereas back when I was younger, there wasn't really anything. I'd come home from school, I'd do my homework, I'd get my football. And even if there was no, like the football pitch was literally like a tarmac pitch, great little pitch, 2 seconds from my house. So I'd walk out my door, the pitch was there. So I'd just get my ball, play football, and then somebody would look out the window, they'd see a plane, and by the time a half hour goes by, you'd have 15 players there and you'd be playing 3-5 sides and stuff like that, and it'd be very competitive and all the players were really good. And as I said, even the lads that I'm managing now at Sheriff, the Murphy brothers, the stuff like that, Darren Dunn, you know, players that easily could have made a career in the league, they all played. And then the older lads,
that, you know, will tell you the stories when you're in the pub with them. And I'd remember them playing five-a-sides on a Saturday and stuff like that. So it was a real good family sort of vibe around the area. And all anyone wanted to do was play football, and everybody was good at playing football. So it sort of toughened you up, as in if you, you know, you'd be sitting there on, say, a Wednesday night, and then the older men, like the age of your father, be playing. You'd be sitting there praying that, you know, they were down a man or something like that, so you could jump in and play with the men. And it's, you know, they'd go the same as they would in a normal man. You'd be getting pulled into the rail. And so it was sort of toughened you up, and, you know, it hones your skills, as in, you know, you have to be technically good if the ball's getting forward into you from in five-side pitches, and you can go boy or player and stuff like that. So I think that's how so many lads from around the area would be, you know, I think technically gifted, because you'd be playing such a small, confined area. It's not like probably other lads from different areas that they play like a five-a-side and a joint field, and you have the run of the place. It was tight, it was confined, it was a high tempo. So it benefited a lot of us in the long run, I think, especially me anyway, type of player I was.
And was it a situation where the better younger players got called up to play with the older lads, kind of situation?
Stuff like that, yeah. Like, everyone was good. You'd just probably have, like, you know, there was times where I'd play, I'd be probably only 10 or 11, I'd be playing against 20-year-olds and stuff like that. So it was good. It was enjoyable, you know. Like, say, if my uncle would be playing, he'd throw you in, he'd get you a game and stuff like that. He might take a little bit easy. But then if they see you're decent, then they'd be saying, right, I'm not going to let him make a show of me and stuff like that. So it was just an upbringing that we had. It was just football. Everybody thought about football. Like, nobody even thought about, like, oh, I want to make it as a professional footballer. And it was nothing like that where we were aiming. It was just, you know, we loved playing football. That's what we wanted to do. And that's all anyone really done. You play football at school, you come back the whole weekend, you'd be getting called in by your mother at 10, 11 at night to be playing football. So it was something that, you know, people would say to me that all they used to see was me and a ball under my arm, and that was true. So I think that sort of, the times have changed. You don't really see that anymore, which is unfortunate. I know there's a new crop of young lads that have come through, as you say, like Troy Parr, and then a good under-21s crop, which is good, which I'm sort of surprised that they're probably the last age group of the generation where a lot of kids will play football out on the pitch and out in the field. So we might be lucky with this generation, but I think the generation after that, we could struggle. I think if there was a FIFA tournament on the internet or something, we'd be decent at it. But, you know, it's just times have just changed. But that's all we done, played football, and it was good competition, and every player was good. There was no bad players. Like, you'd pick your team and you'd be happy with your team, and the competitiveness was, like, really, really intense. If you lost, you'd heard about it, and if you made a mistake, the older lads would let you know, stuff like that. So it was great growing up, I must say.
Yeah, and I would say after this pandemic's over, there'll be plenty of FIFA players going about anyway. I was reading an article in the build-up to this that you did with the 42 a few years ago, talking about this subject, talking about growing up around Sheriff Street and there is quite a bit of crime there, and it is a rough area, but at the same time, you love growing up there because there's such a community aspect to it. And it kind of reminded me of, we were speaking to Irish international Millwall player Aidan O'Brien a few weeks ago on the football show, and he grew up in Islington in London, which had a similar enough situation, so there would have been quite a bit of gang crime around the area, and for him football was an escape. So I'm interested to get your view on that as well. Was that kind of the same situation for you?
Yeah, it was. You know, as I said, I've grew up with friends that, you know, don't get me wrong, I was no angel when I was younger. Stuff that went on and stuff that you did, you just sometimes you follow people and they don't think stuff like that. But I just think when I came to sort of the age of, you know, it was around 14, 15, and I think, you know, Millwall, the scout, when I got scouted from Belvo, they took me over, I think it was about 4 or 5 months early, because they heard that I could have been going down the wrong path with the stuff I was doing and the choices I was making, and I was getting into a little bit of trouble, stuff like that. So they brought me over a little bit earlier, which I think, looking back now in hindsight, was a godsend, because probably if they had waited for, you know, till I was 16, when they were sort of supposed to bring me over, you never know what could have happened and what I could have done stupidly and getting in trouble, or if I could have, you know, so could have done something really stupid. So I was sort of glad when I look back now that I went over for that 4 or 5 months earlier than I did, than I was supposed to. So yeah, it was a, you know, as you said, it's a tough place to grow up in. But think when lads know, you know, that you're not interested in that sort of stuff anymore, you know, there's no hassle, as I said, with best friends that have done, you know, things that, you know, you can't really talk about, but they're still friends of mine. They will be till, you know, they always will be. We have that respect for each other. And it's just, as I said, in that interview, I just went down a different path. I'm one of the lucky ones, really. You know, there's still lads over here that, you know, they didn't make it to England, but they still stuck to football, playing for Sheriff all their life, being honest walkers, and then there's friends that have, you know, been committing crimes and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just, that's just the way it is in an inner city environment. You know, it's just, you know, you don't hold grudges or anything like that against your friends or whatever. They just choose to do what they do, and I chose to do what I do. And as you say, football was the escape. It was. It got me out of, you know, I don't know where I'd be now if I hadn't have went to England. That's sort of what I'm trying to say. I maybe would have just, you know, continued playing football and started in the League of Ireland early and stuff like that. But, you know, you never know. But it did definitely get me away at a time where it was, you know, the paths were close to each other, which way I was going to go. So, you know, I'm thankful that I went down the road to go to England when I was 15.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you went to Millwall. How was that experience for you?
Amazing, yeah. I remember going to Millwall first on trial for about a week, and really just, it was like a small, you know, sort of family club. You know, you ate with the first team players that talked, it was good. Then I remember going to Leeds and Charlton, and Charlton would have been something similar, Man City, stuff like that, but it wasn't the same. I just remember then sitting in the dressing room, Jordan, like when I was on trial, just sitting in the corner, obviously being quite a young Irish lad, and all the lads, the U team players up there, like they were very funny. And that's something I took out of it. I said to myself, I'd like to go back there because it was fun, it was enjoyable, it was a bit of crack. So I ended up just picking Millwall over a couple of different clubs, and I'm glad I did it in the end. You know, I made friends with the lads pretty quickly and stuff like that, and I done well over there.
And I think a fellow Belvedere player or former Belvedere player was there at the time as well. Richie Sadler would have been at the club around the same time, wouldn't he?
Richie Sadler was there, yeah. Bertie Cogan was an ex-Belvedere player. Timmy Glancy was an ex-Belvedere player. We'd loads of ex-Belvedere players because the scout was a Belvedere manager. But yeah, Richie was over there, took me sort of under his wing straight away. I think I was only at the signing for the club. It was during the pre-season. And I remember bringing me and my other housemate, Bertie, to roll the first team players to like an Oasis concert. I think it was in Hyde Park or something. So stuff like that wouldn't happen at other clubs, if you know what I mean. You're there with all the first team players and you're having a bit of laugh and stuff like that. You're getting the train and that sort of just, you know, they just took me in straight away. The managers, you know, took to me. They liked me. So it was a good 4 to 5 years, 4.5 years over there. I enjoyed it, you know. Couple of regrets, but you know, well, that's what happens in life.
And the likes of Richie Sadler taking you under your wing and getting you to almost chat away to the senior players, how important is that for a younger player like yourself moving alone over to another country to get settled in? Because you hear a lot of Irish players coming back because of homesickness, obviously that must have been a big help when you moved over there first.
Yeah, definitely. Like they took sort of for some reason they just seemed to, you know, they took me. Most of the first team players did. Like, you know, I was 16. I was training with the first team. Mark McGee was the manager. I went over had my first pre-season, done well, played halfway through that season, and like, my knees were at me. I had Osgood's, so they gave me like 4 months off. Till I came back. So I had like the whole summer and stuff like that till I went back. And I happened to, my knees after say 6 weeks were brand new. So it was literally in my local U club playing 5-a-sides every day for 3 hours a day, sweating, got the fittest I've ever been. So I went back at 16, you know, training with the first team, doing pre-season and was still running with them, keeping up the first team players, beating them. So then I start training with them. With the first team, Mark McGee took a real liking to me. He was doing, you know, drills after training with the goalkeepers and that stuff, talking to me about finishing and advice that I do give players even now, stuff like that. So it was sort of in the first team plans straight away, really.
the lads be going to college and going to school, and I be not going to school and just turning up at the training ground and training up the first team, and they'd be looking at me saying, you have to go to college. And I was like, I don't want to go to college, I just came here to play football. So they sort of used to laugh about that, and I'd be training up the first team and stuff. And I was actually close to making my debut. I think I had to go and play at an under-18s tournament for Ireland around the same time I was going to make my debut. We were playing Watford. It was actually Watford, and he just said, listen, I'm going to bring you in with the squad just to show you what it's like. You know, you'll be in the stands, but you know, keep doing what you're doing, and you're close to getting a call. And I was obviously travelling then to play. I think there was a tournament in Hungary or Czech Republic or something like that, the 18s world. He said, when you get back, you know, you're straight back in with us. But sure, you got sacked while I was sort of over there, I came back. So that was a bit of a disaster. So that set me back a little bit, because I was, you know, as I said, I was doing well. I was playing, starting for the first team in pre-season games, scored and you know, looking good. So sort of my career sort of then took a little bit of a backstep, because he really liked me. It's nothing better than a man you really like and have confidence in you. It makes you feel 100 feet tall. I was playing for the under-19s when I was 16, stuff like that. So I was developing and all the time. And then I got a back injury, which sort of killed me a little bit, put me out for, I think it was 6 to 8 months. And then I came back then, and it was Dennis Wise was the manager, which I got on well with, and Ray Wilkins, stuff like that. And he was the one that gave me my debut. I think I was either 17 or I was just turning 18, something like that. So I done well, you know. I think I should have done better with choices and staying over there. You know, I probably, you know, I think I could have had a career over there, but I chose to come home and for certain reasons. But sure, you know, with two lovely kids now, so it doesn't really, you know, matter anymore.
Yeah, and talk us through your mindset then when you're coming back to Ireland. Are you massively disappointed, or are you sort of looking forward to getting going again in Ireland?
I wanted to come back. I told them that I wanted to come back. I think I could have had 6 months or something left in the contract, something like that. They sort of said, listen, the only way you'll be going home is if you don't try to go to another club or something like that. So he's like, no, I just want to go home. There was a new manager after coming in. I forget his name. Conan Lee, I think it was. He wasn't having me at all. He didn't like me as a player. So I was at the, you know, stage where I was like, I think it was 19. I was like, right, well, if he doesn't like me, then I'm just going to go home. Not bother. So they agreed. Then an agent out of the blue. I was out. I remember being out the day. I told him I was going home. I happened to meet one of my pals, and we went to the pub. We had an all-day session, and I was in a pub at like 9 o'clock at night. And an agent rang me and says, Leeds want to take you down in the morning. And I was like, all right. So I turned up to Leeds half cut. Training with the first team as an 18-year-old or whatever it was. Done well, you know, not a bother. I remember just getting in the car to the agent, like sneaking off from training, like having me shower and sneaking off without even speaking to the manager. I think it was Kevin Blackwell at the time. And he seen me sneaking off and getting back into the agent's car, and he says, where are you going? You're supposed to be here for 3 days. I said, I don't know, I'm sick of it. I don't think I want to be in England anymore. And you could see that I didn't have the heart for it to be there. And he says, okay, no problem. He says, listen, we'll be interested to seeing you again in January, see how you are. But it never materialized. But I wanted to come home. And there was, you know, it didn't matter if Leeds had offered me a 3-year contract on 10 grand a week, I probably still would have come home. So, you know, you look back in hindsight and say, yeah, you know, I could have made a lot of money if I had stayed over there, and my career probably could have progressed. But I came back here and, you know, I had a decent career for myself and you know, carved out bits of history here and there. So, you know, I done all right. I probably should have done better if I'm being honest, for the ability that I had. A lot of people tell me that I probably should have done better as in played at a higher level, but it didn't happen for whatever reason. A lot of luck just being involved in stuff like that. But you know, I done all right for myself.
Yeah, so you come back initially. You spend a little bit of time at Shamrock Rovers under Roddy Collins, but you sign full-time then for St. Patrick's Athletic, and I suppose that's initially where your breakthrough in the League of Ireland comes, in terms of just scoring goals and doing well in the league as well. I think it was a former Belvo manager in charge at that point as well, Johnny McDonnell.
Johnny McDonnell, yeah, would be from around the area as well. And Brian Carr was involved, Brian was the first one to give me a go at Ireland. So he had me playing with the 18s and 19s, and I was only 16. So Brian really liked me. Brian would be, you know, someone from sort of, you know, a tough area as well. So he liked me. I came back to Rovers on loan, I think, for the last 10 games, something like that, in the relegation. I think we got relegated. I didn't even play in the last two because Roddy Collins got sacked for the playoff games. Yeah. So I was sort of on loan for him. Roddy would have been, you know, a relation of my family. So I sort of just came back for him. So when he got sacked, I just said, listen, my line not playing because, you know, I came back to play for him. My agreement was to play with him. So I didn't play them games. And then I was just playing with Sheriff then, and sort of just trying with Sheriff and sort of just going to sign with Sheriff. I hadn't even thought of League of Ireland. I just was like, well, you're going to just play with me, mates, and enjoy it, get a job or whatever. And then the manager that Sheriff would have been good friends with, John McDonald, Jimmy Scurry's name was, and he said, listen, Mark, he says, there's no way you're playing here. Like, they're too good. Like, you're just wasting, but what's the point? So I'm joining up the lads. He said, give it a try. I know a manager, Johnny. I didn't know Johnny at the time. So I met Johnny. Johnny obviously spoke to Brian, and Brian Carr spoke really highly of me. So they gave me a deal straight away. So played that season. So I was 19, I think, or 19 playing that season. And was in and out of the team. Trevor Malloy was the striker, and Paul Keegan was a centre forward as well. And they were sort of the two lads that played up front. So Johnny had played me out wide, right, wide, left, stuff like that. I'd be in and out of the team, inconsistent. But I showed a lot of potential to him that he thought, right, you know, we'll definitely sign him again. So I end up then the following season, I think I scored 25 goals altogether in all competitions. So it worked out well. There, enjoyed my time at Pats, enjoyed that for the 4 years, especially the years with Johnny. Really got on with Johnny, a really, really great man manager. Someone that you'd, as a player, you'd love to play under. Well, I did personally. I know Keith Fahey did as well. He just knew what way to go about it with certain players. You know, he put an arm around certain players. He'd give certain players a bollock, and he was really good at that. Tactically, he was good. Every training session we done, him and Liam O'Brien and then Trevor Colley came in, the training sessions were good. So I really enjoyed our cuts.
And that year, the 06 season that you scored so many goals, you were the second half goal scorer in that year. PFA Young Player of the Year. I think Bowes just about nipped the title ahead of you that year as well. So
yeah,
it was a brilliant year for St. Pat's. What was so special about that team?
We had players like myself, Keith Fatty, I think Joe St. Dawes was at that time, and Gary O'Neill, and we just, Johnny was at the building a really good, we just had a really good team. I remember starting the season off on fire and being a lot of points ahead, I think. And then Bowles just went on a run, because Bowles obviously had a great team as well, went on a run, and they just pipped us. We came second, which was unfortunate. Yeah, like I remember getting nominated for Young Player of the Year and winning it and being a team of the year and being happy coming second. It was sort of like my first proper season in the league, so I was happy with that. And then the following season again, I think I scored, you know, we always try and beat you. I think that season I scored 21, and then I think the following season was 25 in all competitions. So that's something I always used to try and do. Try beat the goals you scored from the previous season. So then that next season I done that. I think we came second then. Again, I think it was the draw of the maybe, or could have been Bowles again. We came second, and we were just unfortunate. There was just something missing. I don't know where we just were. You know, we done well in Europe, and as a footballing team, we were really good. And Johnny was a very brave manager, as in, he believed in us so much, especially in the European games. I remember, I know, like, from other teams, they'd set up, you know, away from home, different with a 4-5-1 or stuff like that. We used to set up in, you know, same formation as we play at home and play football against these teams. And we were successful in Europe against teams, playing football against them, because we had a really good team with Gary Dempsey, Keith Fatty, with Alan Kirby, really, really good players. Desi Bourne, left back, solid. Barry Ryan, good goalkeeper. So it was a good team. It was just unfortunate that there was other really good teams in the league at that stage. I think back then, like, Cork was good, Bowes were good, like, you know, Rovers were good. Like, teams, they were, like, there was a lot of teams that could have won the league, where I think now you look at, it's probably just Rovers and Dundalk that could, you know, there's a gap. There wasn't much of a gap. Like the teams from the bottom were good as well back then. I felt it was a more tougher league, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and you obviously have a good run in Europe as well, and in the next couple of years as well under Pat at St. Pat's in the UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
As a striker, with the likes of Keith Fahey playing in midfield behind you, and I know you were played on the wing a couple of times by a couple of managers, and that really didn't suit you. How would you describe your sort of style of play? Would you prefer it into feet, or would you be rather over the top and get behind defenders? Or what would you have preferred your midfielders be able to do?
When I was younger, when I first came into the league, I could do both because I was quick enough to be able to go in behind, and I was good enough to counter feet. So it was good for me, and it was obviously a nightmare for defenders because they didn't know it was going to. So, but later on in my career, when I started slowing down and slowed down young enough with my back sort of really, you know, killed me a little bit. It was more to feet. But, you know, I drag defenders into places where they wouldn't want to go, and my vision be good where a midfield runner or a winger would make a run and I'd be able to slip them through. So I developed my game the older I got. I turned more. I was always sort of a number 10, but like, earlier in my career, I could go and beyond, even at Dundalk and at Bowes, I still had that change of pace. But I think when after I left Sligo and I started picking up injuries at Shamrock Rovers, I think in 2013, I started picking up hamstring injuries and calf injuries. And really from that season, for me, my career was really a ride off. From 2013 to, I think I retired at 2016, me, it was really a ride off. I couldn't perform on the pitch the way I wanted it, and it was a bit of a nightmare. So it's always, you sort of look back in the league and say I probably only had 6 to 7 years where I felt I was capable of playing, you know.
Yeah.
But I had a good run of it.
I was speaking to Brendan Bradley, the former Finn Harps player, last week. He's the all-time top goal scorer in the League of Ireland. And the way he describes taking goals and taking chances was quite interesting. It was all instinct for him. He never really practiced shooting. He just knew where to be and knew what he wanted to do with the ball. Would you have been the same, or would you have practiced a lot in training?
No, I wouldn't have practiced. Like, you know, if there's obviously a shooting drill put on, By the staff and work, the coaching staff and that, you obviously do it. I felt it was natural enough to me, you know. If I wanted to put a ball in a certain area, I'd be able to do that. It just came natural, and it was not, I'm not saying easy, but I wouldn't have like been out on the training pitch then after training, setting up drills for myself to try finish. If we looked at a keeper and I think, oh, I could chip him or. No, we go around him, stuff like that. It just sort of came wherever position on the pitch where you are, and if you got in a goal court scoring position, you know, it just came into your head, right, I'll be calling this with my left foot, or I'm going to strike this long hard with my right foot. It just sort of, you know, you just done it instinctively. But that's the way I was as a forward. I never really sort of played as an out and out forward. I never really played as a number 9 till I went to Sligo, and I had the last 3 months of the season when Danny Nark got injured. I had to sort of play as a number 9, but sort of still drifted in the number 10 position, and we had wingers that were going behind. So we had a really good team there as well, and I'm bouncing around a bit, but we had a good team there where it helped me because I wasn't naturally a number 9, but sort of I progressed my game to be one and to be able to drift in and stuff like that. So I would have been just a... I wouldn't have practiced much if I'm being honest. Something just came natural, so that was a bonus.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sligo Rovers there, so we'll chat a bit about your career there because I had Alan Keane on at the start of this LOI series about that season, talking about Paul Cook, and he had some really interesting things to say about him. What are your memories of Paul Cook? Before you start, do you remember getting Beck and Buddies and the training being called in, off in the rain? That was a main story.
That was before my time. Oh yeah, when I signed here, Cookie was only there for about 4 weeks and he'd left. So I know he tried to sign me 3 times before that, and I never went. Ian Foster was the manager of Dundalk. The season I played at Dundalk, I done well. I scored 22 goals. We got to the Cup final.
finished mid-table and was seen that every single struck was scoring great goals and was nominated for Player of the Year, which I felt personally I was unlucky not to get, considering where we finished and you know, the goals I scored and the amount of goals I scored, I thought I should have really won it that year. I was nominated and got in Team of the Year and stuff like that, but I thought that was a year where I'd missed out. But Ian Foster was the manager of Dundalk, and then he went to Sligo as Paul Cook's number two. Mm-hmm. So I was like, lovely, yeah, I'd like to play under Paul Cook. He's a style of football that I'd like, a manager I'd like. And then I obviously knew Ian Foster loved me and I liked the style of football he played. So seemed perfect for me, but sure, after 4 weeks, the two of them had gone. So it was like, right, what happens next? And then, you know, Ian Barraclough came in. Was a really, really good manager, a great coach, really good coach. You know, training sessions he put on that I hadn't done before and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed playing under him.
And Sligo win the league the first year that you're there. And I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, it came down to a massive penalty of yours against your former club, St. Pat's. So can you remember what your mindset was taking that penalty?
Mindset was, I can't wait to take this penalty because I'm going to score it and win the league. That was my mindset.
So no, there honestly, was nothing in your head thinking.
No, it was more enjoy. It was more enjoyment. It was more like, as if it was more saying to myself, like, this is moments that you wait for. Like, this is like, and I remember the ref was taking his time going back and forward, and there was no pressure. And I could hear the lads. Remember, Shawnee O'Connor was talking, you know, having a bit of banter behind me because I'd know Shawnee well and stuff like that, trying to get under my skin. But like, as soon as the penalty was awarded, I knew that was going in. That was meant to be for me to score that goal. So I had that in my mind. I knew where I was going to put the ball. I was getting stick off the Pats fans, which I usually did because I left. So it was nice to score against them. And any hoo ha about, or you know, I didn't shy away from it. The minute I ran at the ball because I wanted to take it that quick to score and win a league for the team. You know, it's something you dream of.
And was the feeling as good as you expected?
It was better considering the start. Like, when I started with Sligo, my first game for Sligo, I got sent off and got a 6-game ban. So, you know, it didn't really start well for me. And usually, you know, 6 games is not too bad. You might play 2 games a week. But I happened to be at the start of the season, they were playing 1 game a week. There was no cup game. So I basically missed 6 weeks of the season. Danny North was on fire. So it was hard to get back into the team then. So I'd play in it. I'd be in and out of the team. And I was just getting frustrated, really, because I felt it was good enough to play. But, you know, Ian had his team and they were doing well, so sort of hard to knock on the manager's door and say, listen, I want to play. Although, like, if you know, believe me, ability that, you know, I thought I should have played and I didn't care who was scoring and who was doing well. If I was got to win, I'd do better. But it took a while then for, I think, I was then getting, I got further then, I was getting better. And then I think Danny got injured, so I sort of was propelled then into sort of his position, and you know, the rest is sort of history. Like, I know Shamrock Rovers at the time were interested. They made an offer from me. I don't know how much the money was to Sligo, but they turned it down. And I wanted to go to Shamrock Rovers because I wasn't playing in Sligo's first team as much as I wanted, and I was travelling up and down from Dublin a bit too much. I know they had an apartment there for me, but I was, you know, sort of coming home nearly every second day and stuff like that. So I wasn't really enjoying it because I wasn't playing. So Rovers showed a lot of interest in me. Stephen Kenny liked me as a player. He wanted to try to sign me a couple of times. And I think Rovers were doing well as well in the league. They were contenders. So I thought, you know, I'd go there. I'd be back home. I'd have a chance to win the league. And, you know, I'd have a manager that would play me, you know. But I think with Danny Knock got injured, it sort of forced Sligo's hand where they couldn't get rid of me. They'd no replacement. They hadn't got anyone else. So it was sort of down to me then for the last, I think, 4 months of the season. And I had to sort of, you know, carry the burden of scoring the goals and stuff like that, which, to be fair, it wasn't really a burden because I believed in myself and I knew that, you know, I could do well. And I think my teammates believed that because they'd seen it every day in training. They knew that when I came on the pitch that, you know, I wasn't going to let anybody down with stuff like, you know, passing balls and giving balls away and scoring. So last 4 months of that season ended up being amazing. And I'm delighted that Sligo stopped me from going to Shamrock Rovers, because I'd probably look back at my career now and I probably wouldn't have won a league. And it would have been a big regret. And, you know, I loved my time then at Sligo. You know, I loved my time at Sligo anyway with the supporters. And it's a great club. Well, at that time, I don't know how they're getting on now. It was a great club. Everyone was so friendly. The lads, you know, we lived all sort of together in a little town, stuff like that. So it was a really, really good club to play for. Nothing against them. Loved the fans. Even when I went back then after leaving them, you know, I still got a good reception. There's only two teams, the Dundalk and Sligo would be the only two teams that would give me a good reception when I went back. So there are two teams that I really enjoyed playing for.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on that the latter stages of your career is kind of hindered by injury and losing your pace and back injuries, hamstring injuries. And you also mentioned that you didn't do as well as you felt you could have in the league. But if you look back at your career, you won every domestic trophy from the league to the FAI Cup to even two Leinster Senior Cups and the President's Cup as well. So do you look back on your career as successful, or do you think that you still could achieve more?
Well, I look back in the short space of time. For me, as I said, from 2014, if you look at me appearances and my stats from then till at Rovers, my injury record was terrible. So I was in and out of the team, couldn't get fit. The manager didn't really like me. Then I go to Pats, Jordan pre-season in 2014 in Pats. I take a shot at Jordan pre-season and my back completely goes. So I'm out for 2 months then. Then I come back, I'm getting fit. And then the last month of the season, my back completely goes again when I have to have back surgery. So that put me out for 8 months. But then I went to Derry then in 2015, I think it was, signed for the last 12 games of the season. And how I got that contract, I'll never know, because I basically played with a limp. Like, I could not run more than 2 minutes. My calf would stop walking. So I basically blagged that contract, if I'm being honest. So I think it's just on my reputation, I got that contract. And then I signed for Bowes and my legs had completely gone. As in, my calf still wasn't walking. I'm still good on the ball, technically. I could see it pass. And I tried to then ask them, I wanted to play as a midfielder then, as sort of a holding midfielder, because I think I would have been better suited at that age of my career. But the manager didn't want to do that. So I just knew then, during that season, I was 29. I played the last game of the season to get away to Finn Harps. I think we lost 1-0 or we drew 1-1 or something like that. But I knew a couple of weeks before that, I said, this is going to be my last game. So I retired on my birthday at 30. So we sort of write off the last maybe 2-3 years of my career with, you know, appearances and goals and stuff like that. So, the funny thing about it is now, right now, my body at 34 is better than it was at 28, 29. As in, back is completely fine. I'm able to do more. So it's a pity that what happened. You know. I think even now, I think I could easily play in the league. To be no problem. It'd be just so, you know, I'd need a pre-season and I'd need to get fit and stuff like that. But it's just my legs gave out on me. That was it, really, from probably 2014. So up until 2012, I really enjoyed it. From, I think I was starting 2006. So yeah, no, I won Young Player of the Year. I won Senior Player of the Year. I was in four team of the seasons. You know, I was nominated for Young Player and Senior Player in the same year. I think I was nominated for Player of the Year 4 times and Young Player of the Year 2 times. So I had a good career. I won everything, as you said. I crammed a lot in a small space of time. You know, I was in the league for 10 years, but, you know, probably the last 3 of them years were, in my eyes, I look back and I don't count them, because with injuries and stuff like that, and I didn't play, and I wasn't the real me. So, yeah, no, I had a good career in this country. You know, there's not many people that can say they've done what I've done and the goals are scored. And, you know, I played for a lot of great teams and played with a lot of great managers, a lot of great players. So I don't look back in this league thinking I could have done more. I just think overall in my career, I could have done more. But maybe my body just didn't let me anyway. If I was, you know, I was thinking about in England, if I had stayed, my body probably would have gave out anyway. So, you know, you just look back and I can never give out, excuse me, about what I've done in this country, because I think for what I achieved in the short space of time, I don't think many players have done that, you know. So I'm happy with that all in all.
Yeah, and do you miss playing at the highest level, or is Sheriff giving you your fix at the minute?
I didn't from probably from when I signed for maybe towards the middle of the season at St. Pat's 2014 till I retired. I wasn't enjoying it at all because, you know, with young lads running around and, you know, they'd be just basically lads that could run. Ability-wise, they wouldn't have nothing on me and they'd be playing ahead of me, and it frustrated me because I could see manager's point of view, you know. If players not 100%, I'm probably only 60-70% at that stage. So that sort of made me retire when I could see younger lads coming into the league that were just, you know, just like the gym and ran around a lot, and then they play ahead of you, and it just sort of disheartened me a little bit because I'd be technically a good player. And when you see a player that's, you know, that I felt wasn't as good as me playing, that sort of disheartened me. So I knew that, you know, I would have retired at early stage. So I did retire on my 30th birthday. And I didn't miss it for ages. I went and played for Sheriff, say a couple of years after that. And then I got the manager's job straight away. And the manager's job has had to give me a real buzz. And I'm starting to play now more as well, which, you know, I didn't realise I missed it till I started playing. So I've been enjoying playing. I've played the last few games. We've been doing well. Team's been doing well. So I have to buzz back for it. And that's just basically because my body can let me now. You know, I feel like I can go onto a pitch and I can run around with young lads and stuff like that, whereas I couldn't 4 years previous. So it's strange to say that I'm in better nick now at 34 than I was at 29. So if any clubs are looking for me, I'm ready. No, I'm enjoying that, Sheriff. I'm really enjoying it. The management thing, it's a different buzz. It's a buzz I didn't think I'd... it was a buzz that I didn't know about, but it's a buzz that I really, really enjoy. But to set up a team, to train a team and to set up a team in a formation and do set pieces, and for your team to go out and work on drills and then see them do it then on a Friday night. Like, it brings a smile to your face, you know, to say, right, the lads are obviously listening to me, they're doing what I want them to do, and when you're winning trophies as well. Now, it's a great buzz. I started young, sort of, in the management. I think I got the job when I think I was 32 when I got the job or something like that. So, and it's a big junior club to get your first job. I remember going for an interview for it, and there was plenty of ex-players that wanted to get the job, but, no, we obviously done well in the interview together. But, no, it's a good buzz, and it's a good buzz when, you know, we're stuck for players and I have to get in and play. I enjoy that, but, you know, if we have a full squad, I tend not to play because I don't like taking a player's spot, you know. So yeah. I'd usually play if we're struggling. We're struggling for players, or if we're down a few bodies, I'd play. But I do enjoy when we're struggling for players because it's getting me on the pitch.
And what does Mark Quigley, Sheriff side, look like? Is it passing, moving? Is it fast pace? What's the brand of football?
It's sort of me. It's you know, your team sort of reflects you, I think, as a player. A manager's team sort of reflects them as a player. So I was a player that loved playing football. So I like my, you know, if it's a back three or it's a back four. At some stages where, like, you know, like basically last season we were doing that well. We basically have just two lads playing at the back because they were that good at defending that. With that many good attacking players, we'll be playing with three number 10s and wide players and other teams be coming up against us and they wouldn't know what be going on. So, it'd reflect me as a player. So if you look back at my career and seeing what type of player I was, you know, I like my lads working hard, high intensity, closing. Listen, you take stuff from all managers that you worked with, and then you look at managers that you enjoy watching in the Premier League and stuff like that, and you rub stuff off them, and you see their interviews, and you know, you get glimpses of their training sessions and stuff like that. So you rub stuff off everybody. But I'd be a manager that likes my team playing football. We play good football. I think we're attractive on the eye. We've a lot of young lads for us. We've a good mix of the older lads and the younger lads. So we go out to enjoy it. You know, there's no. You know, I wouldn't be a roarer or a shouter as a manager, because for me, I didn't like a manager shouting and roaring at me. I like to talk to players with respect. I think if you speak to a player the way you'd like to be spoken to, I think they respond better to it instead of, you know,
screaming and shouting on the sideline or a player, or me, I went the other way. When a manager used to scream and shout at me, I'd basically tell them to go and whatever. That's the way I was. So I don't want players doing that to me. So I seem to go, I got on well with my players. Most of them are my friends out of football. So that was good. So I was able to go in straight away and talk to them, and they respected me. They knew what I'd done in my career, and they know really anything I sort of tell them, it wouldn't be criticism. I'm only telling them to try help them, because at the end of the day, I am their friends, and I'm not going to say anything to, like, you know, sometimes it might hurt them in the moment what I'm saying to them, but it's never anything that, it's never malicious, because at the end of the, outside of the football, you know, they'd be friends of mine. So then they know that I'm not, you know, criticising them in front of people to, like, just get a reaction, stuff like that. So it's going well. I'm enjoying it. You know, badges down the road, I think, will be done. It's something I'm going to look into. At the moment, I've started only, I'm only in a new job a year and a half, so it wouldn't sort of let me be able to do that. But I think another year or so down the road, I'd be probably looking to start doing my badges. I just took the sheriff job to see if I'd like the management, and it's just, it's as you said, has it given me a new lease of life? It's given me a new lease of life to play, to manage, to know, to probably go into the League of Ireland. You look at young lads now getting jobs in the League of Ireland. You know, and, you know, CV-wise and player-wise, you know, I could put mine up against theirs, you know. And so hopefully I'd have a good name and a good reputation in the league to, you know, get a coaching job down the line or a manager's job or stuff like that. So I'm going to just keep doing well as sheriff and see how it goes. But, no, I'm enjoying it. The lockdown, I'm enjoying as well. A bit of peace and quiet. We're looking forward to get back to the football now.
Yeah, and just before we finish up, we obviously seen the road to opening up the country again, and it could be 3 months before we get a haircut. Is the curly hair, famous curly hair, growing a bit out of control at the minute?
Yeah, I'm getting called, what's his name, Jackie Mill now, semi-pro at the moment. So the afro is really, if this had been a video call, I think everyone would have seen the beard. I'm like a woolly mammoth walking around. So, I think if it's another 3 months before I get a haircut, I think I'll have dreadlocks at that stage. So, it's hid under a hat as usual and stuff like that. But I think with the warm weather coming out, I'll have to let the fro free. So, the curly hair is still there. It's out and about.
You'll have to take a razor to it like I did. Mark.
Not a chance.
I've an egghead at the minute. I got my housemate to do it.
I know. I've seen plenty of people that have shaved the head. No, I had a shaved head back a long time ago, and I never go down that route. So the hair will stay until I can get a proper haircut. So that's my goal at the moment.
On that note, Mark, thanks very much for joining us. You've been brilliant with your time.
No problem, Mendy.
Yeah, welcome back to Team 33 and a call here. Now, that is about all we have time for on Team 33 this week. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to catch back any of that, go to offtheball.com/podcast. You can find us in the OTB podcast network. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Team 33, spelled out all in words, or check out all of our video stuff on youtube.com/offtheball. We might do a big German Bundesliga preview before the 16th of May. That's next week. So we might do that. Let's see if we can get a guest started for that. But until then, take it away, Johan. Die